Hi, everybody, and good morning here, actually, from Cottonwood, Arizona, near Sedona, a beautiful area in Arizona. And I'm on my travels and just want to remind us all that, well, I'm sure we realize the Scorpio full moon is coming up, and I think it's at 5:22 and 49 seconds in the morning, tomorrow morning at London time, GMT actually. Universal time, GMT, which never changes, just like Arizona time never changes. So this is a sign in which glamour really is attacked. We know that Scorpio is particularly connected with the second initiation, though it's found active at the first and third as well. And it has something to do with the fourth initiation and the destruction of the egoic lotus and causal body. But particularly, it's around the second initiation where the major assault on glamour has to be made. So obviously, we have a very good opportunity here with the Scorpio energy so available. And each one of us should emerge in some degree triumphant over something. There's so many obstacles here, being a human being and belonging to the fourth and warring kingdom on the fourth planet, if we count Vulcan, from the sun. So the warrior aspect is very, very strong, and as disciples we have to learn how really to be spiritual warriors and overcome what is holding us down to lesser level of vibration. So it's a very good timing, I think. We are working, on the glamour of fear in general. And today's discussion, a little bit, is on the fear of failure, one of the major fears which assails disciples and aspirants, along with the fear of the future. I think many human beings have that. But this fear of failure, and the inferiority complex, which kind of goes along with it, when you begin to realize how big everything really is, how amazingly vast, and how tiny this particular emanation we call ourselves at this time is, then we begin to feel a little overwhelmed, more than a little overwhelmed. Like, can we really do it? And this, we have to have the confidence in the inner immortal God, which we really are. As Saint Paul told us, know ye not that ye are gods? Well, we're even more than gods. We are God itself, the universal logos, and on until the absolute reality becomes our the fact of our identity. Which is, I suppose, hardly the case for most of us, at least in any consistent manner. Let's just have a little, wherever we may be, scattered here and there, a little bit of a connection with each other in the silence. And this silence really does increase the energy. The important thing is to realize that the many are the one, and that's one of the methods. I think it's very much involved with the third ray, but also the second ray, that the many are the one. And to simultaneously perceive and see the many in all of their uniqueness and individuality, and still realize they are the one. So even on our own little level, we have the many in the group, and it's one group, which is offering itself as an instrument to the hierarchy to help eradicate this prevalent state of Kamic and Kamo-monastic consciousness that we call glamour, and which veils the truth of things and which misleads us. Very dangerous at this time, because humanity has so much power it cannot afford to be misled, taken down paths which lead to error. It's too dangerous. So we're working on the inside all together. On the plane of mind, and you know, hopefully the soul-infused mind increasingly. We're working to help change things from the inside out. We also do our bit on the outside too, of course. But unlike many of the external workers, we know a little something about the internal work, which is effective in changing the consciousness. And if we change the consciousness, we change the behavior of human beings. That's what we're trying to do. Changing our own behavior, of course, that's number one. Changing it for the better. And hopefully that will have an effect. Our thoughts will have an effect to change the behavior of the many human beings who are still on the ordinary wheel, as we say, the non-reversed wheel, still functioning pretty much as personalities and maybe not even as the full personality. And we have a lot of work to do. And little by little, we lift the veils, or we dissolve the veils, or we destroy the veils. Dissipate the clouds, bring light in and banish darkness until we can all function interestingly in that scorpionic type of light we call the light of day. And on the Buddhic plane, which is our plane as human monads, that's our area of expression. As human monads, the light of day, seeing things as they are, is to prevail. And not seeing things as they are not, distorted by glamour. So, Olivia Tuya and I, we invite you in this weekly participation, along with the other groups that are working on glamour in various places. You know, takes a lot of us here and there. We invite you to offer yourself for this type of service, which is inwardly so potentially effective if we operate in the right way. Now, let's have a little om as we consecrate ourselves as that instrument that wants to do some good for the clarification of consciousness at this time. So let's see where we are here. We've looked at a number of these fears. We're on our 54th Dissipation of Glamour program. They do begin to mount up. We've looked at the fear of physical pain, to which many of us are in thrall, even though we maybe don't realize it. We've looked at the fear of the future, so closely related, I think, to the fear of failure. We've looked at the fear of death. Obviously, just having a mental concept of these things is useful, but it's not final in any way. I'm remembering Master Moria talking about, well, you may read all about a blast furnace and have all kinds of theoretical ideas about it, but when you approach it in real life, you better have more than theory. You better know how to protect yourself. So we want to transform our theory into factual ability. And we can do that if we simply persist. Now let's look at this fear of failure. They're all from this wonderful book, A Treatise on White Magic, which is, DK tells us, an perhaps an unexpected thing. He tells us that it's really a book about the control of the astral body. I remember when I read that for the first time, it was kind of a shock, because I had said, oh my goodness, it's a book about magic, isn't it? Treatise on White Magic. Yes, it is that, and he gives us the preliminaries of those things. But if you look more deeply, it has to do, as far as the stage of evolution at which we find ourselves, it has to do with mastering something that is oftentimes out of control, because we live in such an astral Buddhic solar system on a astral planet, astral Buddhic planet here, the logos of which has not yet achieved the second cosmic initiation, which has everything to do with the control of his own astral body. So it's the only unified vehicle, as we know. There's no lines there, right? Here on the mental plane, there's a line separating higher and lower mind, dotted line. Here on the physical plane, there's a dotted line separating the four ethers from the three dense levels, but not on the emotional plane. It's unified, very powerful. So when we're talking about a book that's dealing with the control of the astral body, it's no small thing. He tells us, I guess we're all beginners in a certain way, and he says, well, the beginner is always more consciously conceited than the more experienced disciple. And we may think we've overcome a whole lot of things, only to be surprised by the fact that we haven't. So it's a wonderful book, and deserves reading and rereading. And that's the case with the Tibetan book. He sometimes says that, well, I've written enough for the next generation. I wonder what he means by generation. The normal 25 years of a generation? Or does he mean the next spiritual generation? Because when I look at what he's given, it's not assimilable in hundreds of years. And even then, the advice and guidance of a master will be needed for real assimilation. So we've got enough to keep us going, plus the third installment is coming out very soon. Well, here's the fear of failure. This affects many people along many lines. The fear that one may fail to make good. We all have an idea or an ideal of what the good is and what we should being achieved, and we contrast that with what we have achieved. The fear that we may not gain the love and admiration of those we love. Think about that in relation to your own life. Always, success hangs in the balance. The fear that others despise us and or look down upon us. So we try to please them, and maybe deviate from what we really are intended to do and what we really are, because we try to please others so that they will love us and not hate us and not look down upon us and will respect us. And the fear that one may fail to see and grasp opportunity and thus remain in the same wretched condition in which we find ourselves right now, without progress, not really moving. The names of the fear, legion. So these are all aspects, he says, all aspects of the fear complex, which colors the lives of so many worthy people. So I thought, as I was looking this over, let's pause here and think about fear, this fear of failure. In relation to our own consciousness, in relation to our own life. Let's just take out a few quiet moments and think about this fear of failure and how it may be affecting us and maybe what we can do about it. What sort of failure do we sometimes think about and which causes the fear reaction within us, you know, the lack of positivity? Remember how positivity, we live on such a secondary planet in the soul sense, in a secondary solar system, and positivity is the great achievement of the initiate on the second ray. It affects our planet, affects our solar system, and fear is just the opposite of that. So, what are those looming failures which may circulate in the background of our consciousness, and maybe we don't give them so much attention, but they're there, perhaps? You know, you can use kind of a formula. I fear that I will fail to, you know, fill it out. You know, when I think that in the case of disciples and aspirants, we all have this sense of maybe an inner assignment, something that we're here in life to do, a purpose, something that the solar angel who supervises us has designated as our desirable type of accomplishment in this particular lifespan. And, you know, maybe the fear of the failure to execute or accomplish one's purpose for disciples is a really big one. It's enough, perhaps to even know the purpose. And then what is the fear? What is the possibility that maybe we just won't be able to do it? So anyway, the first step is to get a hold of the kind of failure that we may fear. Now, maybe some of us are entirely done with this, and we have this great positivity of the second degree initiate, second ray initiate, and nothing looms ahead that looks difficult or even impossible or unlikely. But anyway, examine yourself, examine your psyche to see what unsuspected to you may be looming in a slightly unconscious way in your psyche and, causing damage, really. So anyway, this fear of failure, this fear complex, which colors the lives of so many worthy people. Presumably, disciples are worthy people. Aspirants are on their way there. This can be based upon an environment which is uncongenial and unappreciative. In other words, I can never accomplish anything here. Look where I'm placed. If I were only in this position or that position, then I could really do something. But the thing is, of course, we are pretty well placed where we're supposed to be, and we have to make the best of it. It can be based on an equipment which seems inadequate to the task. Well, which one of us has not felt that that is the case? When you begin to grasp what an initiate's mind, a master's mind, or, consciousness, or consciousness of a planetary logos, and on, even though they're just a drop in the cosmic bucket, as it were, you begin to realize, well, what kind of equipment do I have? What can I possibly accomplish in my little sphere? But then again, we don't have to save the whole universe, not quite yet. We have to accomplish what we can within our own sphere of limitation as an emanation, which will expand and expand and have a greater ring pass knot and sphere of activity. But right now, we are where we are. So, forget the good self and the bad self, and let only the Christ be seen and heard. We can't get too down on ourselves or our apparent selves and negate any kind of effectiveness because of this self-persecutory complex. So anyway, this fear of failure can be based on equipment which seems inadequate to its task, and in many cases has its root in the fact that a man is a disciple or a really big soul ready to tread the probationary path. That's kind of, encouraging, because I guess DK is thinking about the whole range of development of the human being, and by the time we are ready to tread the probationary path, sometime, when the latter part of the fifth petal of the egoic lotus is opening, and before the first initiation, but maybe it's in sight. Maybe he's considering such an individual as a really big soul, relatively, of course. So he has had a touch of soul contact by this time, right? He has seen the vision and the possibility, and that's the difficult part. Magnificent thing, and then, like Alice Bailey, she was taking down certain things, and vistas would appear, not the things she was going to write for the Tibetan, but huge vistas of reality, just overwhelming, appeared to her as she was taking down certain things for the Tibetan. And in the face of such visions, one can feel very inadequate, very daunted. But he's had his touch of soul contact. He has seen the vision and the possibility. He looks at his personality and ranges it up alongside the work to be done. Well, there's that there's that comparison, which always takes your breath away, until you decide, well, you know, I am what I am, and I have what I have, and with what I have, I must do the best I can. So he ranges this along the work to be done and the quality of the people with whom that has brought him into contact. Well, you know, there are some very high people, but there's also some people where you say, oh, if only I could work with workers that really knew what they were doing, then I would really be able to express myself so much better. But the first step is realism, actuality, what you see accurately. And through that, not to complain, you know, complaint is one of the things that we drop on the path of yoga. We have been, as I said, the victors of endless universes. There's only one victor. It's what we are, and we've been victorious more times than you can ever count. We have to remind ourselves of that when things look blocked and difficult in to express through. So anyway, these are the kinds of states of mind that produce this inferiority complex, which makes us feel like, I can't do it. I can't. Well, the old saying we've all been taught, you know, can't never did anything. Can't never did anything. So the can-do attitude of the inner immortal God is correct, ultimately, and victorious, ultimately. So the energy we know, the result is an inferiority complex, he says, okay, of a most powerful kind, because fed by real streams of force from above. Finally, all these wonderful things have come into the area of our consciousness and our energy system, and then we're going to start comparing what we think we are with the magnificent thing we see. But of course, we have to remind ourselves that we also are that magnificent thing that is coming down. And we're really already the higher aspects of ourselves. But these higher aspects are not yet expressing in the more limited field of our consciousness and our power. But that will change. Energy, we know, follows thought and is tinctured by the quality of that thought. The man turns a critical and disgusted eye upon his personality. I think, you know, there's been a lot of that in Christianity. All this emphasis on old Adam, born in sin, conceived in sin, you know, living in sin. People don't give themselves a chance and see the divinity of limitation, the divinity of limitation, the divinity of limitation too. It's all divinity. It's all God in different phases of expression and bondage. Energy, we know, follows thought and is tinctured by the quality of that thought. The man turns a critical and disgusted eye upon his personality, and by so doing feeds the very things which he deplores, and thus renders himself still more inadequate to the task. Talk about self-defeat, you know. So positivity is true, and it's so effective, and it cultivates what we have to bring through rather than defeat the very thing that we want to express. It is a vicious circle of effort and must be offset by a complete realization of the truth in the words, as a man thinketh, so is he. Well, truth will reveal to us that we are the immortal inner God and more. And even though it seems unlikely, when we look at our equipment, if we think very, very deeply and remove one veil after another, one ring pass knot or horizon after another, we will find the immortal inner God in which, Master DK says, we are to have confidence. So as he dwells upon the nature of his omniscient soul, it's the soul of the universe, really, ultimately, because that's our soul, the soul of the whole universe, he becomes like that soul. And instead of emphasizing the negative, you know, he emphasizes the positive and it grows. And he is restored to what he really is. As he dwells upon the nature of his omniscient soul. Now, you know, no soul of the humankind is yet omniscient, but is that really our soul? Remove one ring past not after another, and the soul is a huge universal thing, eventually to be appreciated as our soul. He becomes like that soul. His thought is focused in the soul, consciousness, and he becomes that soul in manifestation through the medium of the personality. Now, we talk about it all the time. Obviously, in the real thing, in the doing of it, in the positivity of it, in the realization of ourselves as the immortal soul, immortal omniscient soul, it's a whole different thing from having just a mental concept. A mental concept is good. It's a good start. You have to have it. But we have to take it further and further and further and attenuate the apparent boundaries, wear them thin until they just disappear. There'll be a new ring past not. Even the universe has a ring past not. And when it disappears, as ever it does, we are restored to our true identity, which is the absolute deity beyond any limitation of universe. So DK says, this is but a brief summation of the major fears which afflict humanity and serves only to open up the subject and to give opportunity for a few practical suggestions. He's going to go on with that. And it's such a great subject that we're going to wait till next time to do that, the elimination of fear. Okay, writing my son there who's coming to visit me, but let's see here. Yeah, I've got to get this, because this will be the end of our reading for today, and we can have a little discussion on what might be suggested. So this is the end of Dissipation of Glamour, Initiative number 54, reading. And today is the 3rd of November, 17. Whoop. I've got a cursor that's jumping all over the place. 3 November. And then our next work will be next Friday, which will be November 10th. And we'll get into the elimination of fear. You know, we've discussed a number of them. Meanwhile, you can think about the fears that dog you. I think if we didn't have fear, we wouldn't be where we are. And I think the first major development in the elimination of fear, major is the fourth initiation. So beginning of doggy number 55, and this will be 10, November 17. All right. So, you know, we have to, it's not always the most pleasant thing to think about fear, because fear is an unnecessary limitation. There are necessary and unnecessary limitations. And fear creates a situation in which we fail to advance into the next sphere of opportunity. We don't want that. We want to keep on advancing, enlarging our identity until our identity is restored to what it really is, and not the mistaken, bounded identity which we seem to have. So we overcome fear. You know, as I've often said, the Black Lodge considers it a very negative sign when a disciple is fearless. So let's remember that. So, okay. Look, friends, so if any of you has any thoughts on these matters, any questions on the fear of failure, you know, anything that may have come up in your thought about what you might fear? Is it the usual discipler kind of thing, you know, that you won't make good, won't make the grade, won't fulfill your purpose, won't please the master, won't please the ashram, whatever, you know? Then we can discuss that.
Yes.
Right. I hear you, Brett.
We have a comment, written comment from Diane and another comment from Suzanne.
Okay, good, good. I think I found them here. From Diane, it says, could fear be prodding us to search for ways to build up our spiritual warrior shield? That's an interesting question. The fear usually causes us to retreat, but it also reveals to us our vulnerability, and the spirit within will not tolerate that vulnerability for long, because the spirit knows it is invulnerable. There's nothing else, so nothing else can touch it. Spirit is the only thing that is. Spirit being, it, that's it. So it wants full expression. And when that sense comes upon you, then we try to find the ways to build up our invulnerability, or the sense of our invulnerability in the world. Now, of course, with the building of the spiritual warrior shield, we maybe don't or should not think of it in the usual sense of the shield, you know, that the warrior carries, but as seven great streams of divine love. The seven streams of divine love, one on each ray, with yourself in the center, going forth, giving you protection all the way around, and at the same time stimulating love in the environment. Now, I wonder, I may have mentioned this kind of thing before, and, you know, I've just got so much on this computer, one day it's going to explode. But it already has, actually. Let's see. So this is AAB extracts, which I'd like to get to all of you so you can have that. I'd like to have that on Makara or something. And let's see. Seven. I'm just going to put seven and see what happens here. That's probably not the seven rays, seventh ray, Lord, Jewel. Seven streams? Let me try that. Will I get seven streams? No, that's not it either. Shield. Seven. Oh, divine love. Seven. It's protection. Of all times not to be able to find this. Protection. Ah, there it is. It's called by very different things, but just get to it. The seven spokes of the wheel of protection. So, you know, whatever our shield really is, this is what the Tibetan advises. I would ask you, as far as you possibly can, he's talking to a very sensitive person, to insulate yourself from fear and from the effect of the world situation and its allied problems. This person was, you know, Pisces, extremely sensitive, Cancer rising, and very strong Neptune. The future for you is planned, and you can take the right steps through the power of your illumined mind, first ray mind he had. I would ask you to carry forward this insulation along the line of love. See, that's our shield. I would ask you to carry forward this insulation along the line of love using the ancient method, which has been called, quote, the wheel of living fire, which burns not but ever heals. He was a great, you know, psychological healer, Roberto Assagioli. The wheel of living fire, which burns not but ever heals. This method is occult and safe and constitutes no barrier to relationships, as does building of a separative wall. You know, the old theosophical method, you think of a shell around yourself and it protects you. And so the method is as follows, right? See before you a wheel of living fire, a wheel of fire with seven spokes. See it immediately before your eyes. Then by an act of the creative imagination, see yourself standing in the center at the hub of the wheel. There regard yourself as if you were that hub. From that central position, send out the seven streams of living love. Now we have to practice that, of course. And there'll be the different colors and the different qualities of the rays. The seven streams of living love radiating upon the world. When you do this, you serve and are at the same time completely protected. This exercise can become instantaneous and effective. It generates a protective force and at the same time makes you a living center of light and love. I don't know, Brett, where could I put this so people, it's not too long. Do you think it can be put into something where people can copy it, or I'm going to just
I'll give it a try. Into the chat.
Okay, put it somewhere because you know what? I can't quite, I don't think it's going into, it's too big to go. Wait a second. It looks like chat. You are completely protected. And then maybe I just don't get any more. This last little bit is left out, you know.
Oh, yeah, so, I'll do what I can do.
Okay, do what you can do. Okay. No, it's not going to go anymore. But anyway, Dinah 1, page 156, and this exercise, they probably allow me to do something like this, but maybe there's a better way to do it. Anyway. All right, so there, Diane. Was it Diane? There is something about the shield. And if fear can be, fear can be one of those things that is very debilitating, but at the same time, it can motivate us to overcome it. Let's see now. I think, Suzanne, you have something here too. And then on to, Suzanne several times. I once read in DK's words that upon death, we review three major reasons. Purposes. I don't know about that. I don't know, but we certainly do review. And there are three major exits at death from the physical body. And I've had a little experience, you know, with some of that. It's the solar plexus, the heart, and the head. The inner man, inner human being can exit from one or other of those chakras at death. It just depends on how far along one has brought one's consciousness. Okay. So let me say a little more. We review three major reasons, purposes for our previous incarnation. Well, you know, it may be, I don't know for sure about the three. Any comments on how to assess these while yet planted on Earth? I'm not, you know, it is an assessment that some teacher has made. I don't recall DK saying that, but he says if we do the evening review in the right way, we're going to save a lot of time once we pass over, at which time a lot of reviewing would have been done and we can make our way through the wilderness. Sometimes the astral plane is called the wilderness and the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. Well, maybe it's not going to be 40 years, but there is that tendency to wander in the wilderness of the astral plane after death. So doing the evening review will help us, you know, work out our motives and what has to be corrected and our achievements and so forth. And you say, and if I may add from a poem I once penned, I, the pilgrim's upturned face, I, the angel, bleeding grace. We are both one, and in times of dark doubt, needs remember this. Yes, very beautiful. We are both. And those lines from your poem capture this. We're wondering, here it is, Jan. How these glamours are entangled one with another, they certainly are. It's like a skein, you know, you pull on one, you get another one, and Pluto helps us break the thread and cut one thing from another, and that reinforcing agglomeration begins to wither and die as we learn to kneel effectively in Scorpio and in Capricorn. So they're all connected. The beginning of them, I mean, and basically, like I've said, eliminate the mistaken identity, eliminate the lower ego and its desires, and we've struck a major blow on glamour. Mistaken identity is a huge factor, and the desires of the apparent but not real self cause us to be caught and attached to all kinds of distortions which are not real. So anyway, the beginning of the glamours or whatever are difficult to find. The fear of failure seems intertwined with the need of recognition and appreciation. Yes, okay. Fair enough. The views others hold in response to us that supports the qualities of positivity in the personality is that is an understandable, unstable fix, unstable fix. Well, you know, I'm always reminded of Master DK saying something here, and I wish I could apply it more regularly. I certainly recommend that others apply it, but then I have to apply it for myself. And it's very simple. They say, what do they say? Let them say. They say, what do they say? Let them say. So there's a certain divine indifference there to what other people may say about you, think about you. It's what you think, you as the soul and the solar angel within you. What your inner self thinks of your outer self. That's what's important, and not what others, apparent others, are saying. So, anyway, it's an unstable fix, okay? Creates more harm than good, it seems. One must reach the point of not being affected by others' view of us as individuals at all. Well, look what happens when we get rid of the other altogether. You know, in the true yoga of identity, I might almost call it that, you know. I think I sometimes feel I'm working in this identify as being group. I think working on the yoga of identity. And when we get rid of the other and you really feel it, you realize it, and you know who's talking here. So it's this the most inmost point of being that has to deliver the verdict, as they call it, standing before the bar of the soul, standing before the judgment of the soul. The evening review, right, okay, Yvonne. Well, you know, in as we work in the Arcane School, some of us have done that, or along similar lines as we do in the Moria Federation and the School for Esoteric Studies and so forth. He tells us, you know, at the end of the day, basically you start working backwards on a causal chain. What caused the present moment and the moment before that, the moment before that. And sometimes he gives us guidance, a particular question. Like he'll have a whole month of questions. He calls it a review on joy. So every night before going to sleep, you take that question about joy and you submit your daily activities to that question. So basically, it's a detecting of the causes of conditions in your life. Where'd that come from? Well, where'd that come from? Where'd that come from? And you work with your way back, and you see the causal chain, and you're illumined about the various factors which led to good or to ill. And so there are directed evening reviews, and there are just general evening reviews. Maybe it shouldn't take more than 10 or 15 minutes, but revelation comes causally in that manner. I think I do have somewhere the review on joy. I've got a number of those reviews, and in discipleship book, I think he will have to go looking, but I think he has some of the evening reviews that you can use for a month asking different questions of yourself. It's a little quiet time, you know. Maybe it's better to do it now than after you've passed out of the body and have to spend a lot of time doing it. He says it will save time later. So we see ourselves much more clearly. Right. Okay, Diane, you bet. That sevenfold wheel of living love, it's a wonderful exercise. And we need that, you know, especially when we're really beside ourselves, so to speak, and we're feeling potentially overcome, you know, and things are crowding in on us. That sevenfold wheel of living love is protective and blessing and stabilizing at the same time. I hear a thunder in the heavens. Is that you, Brett?
Yes. Michael, Stacy, and Olivia have their hands up.
Okay. Righto. Okay, well, let's... Olivia, you... I'll go in alphabetical order here. Okay. Hold on. And go. Olivia.
Michael, hi, and hello, everyone. There's something besides the usual glamour and illusion that I wanted to share some brief data about, showing how vast that deliberate disinformation, manipulation, and divisiveness is being spread so that we can, you know, discriminate better and help dissipate it. We had some real interesting testimony in the United States before Congress by executives from Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And they were summoned to testify about Russian disinformation manipulation in the U.S. And really, you know, we may suspect these things are going on, but the figures were just shocking. Facebook said that Russian operatives posted a certain number of posts, and they were reposted, and they reached 126 million people with these various posts. Twitter said Russian-linked tweets were posted 1.4 million over the 3 months period before the U.S. election, and the tweets then received approximately 288 million views. This is according to the company reports. And on Google's YouTube, Russian operatives uploaded over 1,000 videos. And on Instagram, 120 pieces of Russian-linked content were posted. And so this comes from, you know, the company's own records. Then sampling of ads, such as a Russian finance ad linking Hillary and Satan, was shown in congressional hearings that revealed how pervasively Russia used Facebook, Twitter, and Google. Facebook reported a 50% increase in ads in the last months before the U.S. election, and it made $10 billion in profit from advertising. So when lawmakers of both parties heard this data, I mean, they were outraged, and they really expressed so much frustration with the answers from tech companies, you know, and stressed that they had to do much better in preventing this. But the important thing is that this is actual data now of what's going on in the United States, but it goes on elsewhere. You know, and the U.S. does its own things too. Everybody does. But the reason I wanted to share this is just because it invites so much more discrimination and discernment as to what are the sources of so-called information and so-called facts that are being distributed in the media and social media in particular. It's just been shocking to so many people how vast this is, you know, in this one little slice of testimony. But when we know that so much deliberate ideas, deliberate lies and disinformation is going on, you know, we're seeing just a small piece of the iceberg. But it just, helps us realize how we ourselves have to use so much more discernment and discrimination. And really, what we're doing to try to help dissipate all this is really so needed, because there are instruments of deceit that are working deliberately to fill the whole plane of emotion and ideas mentally with all these distortions. It's pretty shocking.
Yeah, thank you. That's good. It's good to know what the so-called enemy is doing and to be accurate about it. Yeah, I've been reading some of that, and as you say, the scale of it is immense. And, you know, it reminds me, well, this is all part of the attack of the Black Lodge. It's the third attack. You know, it's the third major attack. And the old saying is the devil, whatever, Satan, whatever, is the father of lies. And we have to question what is the lie and what is truth. And, of course, some degree of self-knowledge, some degree of education, all these things are needed before people are equipped to do this kind of analysis on the source and merit of what they read. So groups of our type, which are, you know, deeply into the educative mode, are helping to increase the light so that type of discrimination can be made. But we're in the middle of an attack, there's no question about it. It may be focusing very much in the United States and, you know, its influence in the world. And this is, I seem to remember that the Tibetans said that wherever the Christ was going to set up his headquarters, there would be the heaviest attack. So I do think that the United Nations and New York with its second ray Seoul, and eventually the shift of government from Washington to New York, which DK predicted, New York being a major communications center. I think that the United States might very well be the physical operation headquarters of the Christ and his initiates, and I think we're seeing the battle that is prophesied before this is possible. It's very heavy, and we better make sure that we can see clearly, as otherwise we'll become part of the problem. I mean, you know, I might say I have friends that are part of the problem, you know, and they look at me and they say that I'm part of the problem, okay, but they really are, okay. Anyway, but to be clear about one's own mentality and consciousness, this is extremely important, and you know, hopefully that will clarify. Thanks, Livian. Thanks for sending that out. I wonder if is there any way to send that to Brett and Joe and BL here so that that could be made available, that document that you had created.
Sure. I'll send it on to Brett, and then you all can figure out the best way.
Yeah,
because the data is just shocking. It's so surprising. Yeah. And this is testimony by the companies themselves before Congress.
Well, I remember the head of Facebook recently said, okay, we're now going to do something about this. That was a few weeks ago, you know, and ever since then, there's been more revelation. Anyway, the handouts, it could be a handout, and if Brett or Joe or BL could handle that, if you want to send that out to them, maybe we can get it in here before we sign off. Okay, thank you, Olivia, for those that happy news. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, but we got to know. We've got to know. We have to know.
We do, so that we can protect against it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, Michael, you go ahead now.
Hello, Michael, and everyone. Glad I have an opportunity. You know, today we're talking about the fear of failure, and it is a quite real fear. And I suspect that it's affecting all of us to some extent, as it can be a very paralyzing force. But since the astral plane is also that plane of consciousness of great duality, there's also the fear of of getting it right. You know?
Nelson Mandela speech.
And that can paralyze us too. Yeah, that can paralyze us too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, somewhere is that narrow path in the middle where there is no bias, and we don't get glamored by the left or the right, and using discernment, we find the truth in the middle.
The noble middle path. Well, the whole thing, fear being the major planetary dweller on the threshold, you know, whether it's a fear of one's own potential greatness, you know, that mandala thing that went around time ago, and a fear of the usual fear of failure. It's fear, you know, and the great disciple Roosevelt, as we had said before, you know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, wherever that came from, you know. Probably was not his originally, but it needed quoting at that time. So develop the truly fearless attitude, and this is where the first ray really comes in, because these are the people that are more likely to possess the fearless attitude, and it's usually, I think, based upon the certainty of one's own inextinguishability, one's own immortality. It's usually based upon the sense of one's own indestructibility and of humanity's essential indestructibility. It's usually based on understanding what being really is, and to understand that one is that indestructible factor, being itself. Well, however you get there, you know, it's going to be a unique path for every individual, but these few fundamentals, I think, really have to be held in mind so we can eliminate the fear factor.
I think there's been a tremendous change over the last 50 years in terms of this knowledge, this wisdom being brought out more into the world. You know, 50 years ago as a young person, it was like, you can't talk about this out among other people because of, you know, you'll be considered crazy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's not so much the case now.
Mm. The second ray is one of the major rays of psychology. It's been getting stronger and stronger. And the Western civilizations, and I would say to a great extent the United States, has made a real contribution in the popularizing of insightful psychology among, you know, very ordinary people who are not necessarily occultists at all or getting into these deeper mysteries. It's been spread around. It's become legitimate. The encounter groups, the self-help groups, the whole idea of the Aquarian group in a protected environment talking about deep things, this really has emerged. And those countries that wield the second ray have really helped a lot with that. So we're on our way. It is correct. And we will find greater understanding all the time. And now you're not quite crazy when you do these things. You're crazy for other reasons, but if you don't mind being crazy, it's quite okay.
Who cares now?
Indeed. I think a lot of us who are, you know, aspiring and our disciples have not to worry about whether other people consider us crazy. I just remember so many talks that I would give to my, you know, quite orthodox thinking family in the old days, and I didn't care. I just speak of these things, that's all, and let the chips fall where they may. And, you know, sometimes it did some good, and sometimes, you know, I was considered crazier than they thought originally. But that's okay. We have to be willing to bear the adverse opinion of others, because those opinions will fade as reality fades in. It's just a question of courage. That's why DK said, basically, I could wish you were all younger, and I could wish you were more courageous. So courage is wielded in many different ways, and sometimes it's just what you say and to whom. So we're on our way. That's all I can say. And thank you, Michael, for your thoughts.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, friends, I think that that may have covered it. And it's time for us to get into our meditation on the failure and the fear of failure. So we will do that. And next time we get together, we're going to be dealing with the elimination of fear by various occult methods, which use the mind, the enlightened mind, and also the occult forces, which can help this deeply rooted problem. Okay. All right, so as you know, I can't do the meditation exactly as we would do it if we were all a group of nine or something like that, you know. But with a little minor adaptation, it can be done. So our first work here is to gather in the silence, not 10 minutes of it perhaps, but in the silence for a little while. And we think of each other in the soul space, in the silence. Now we will use our protective formula, the cross of divinity, as we know, center of the forehead, center of the chest, left eye, right eye. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. We see that cross of divinity as if glowing, protecting each of us and all of us from actually this very dangerous area in which we are choosing to work sacrificially. Now the three lights, we're going to draw them together. First, the light of matter, which we can consider particularly etheric physical. We draw it up to the mental plane, and there the light of mind is found. Two lights merge on the plane of mind. We visualize this. And the third light is the light of the soul. And so we meditate for a moment on contacting that very real soul light that we want to feel and realize as real. And we bring it down and fuse this soul light with the light of matter and the light of mind. Three lights blend as one light. The etheric physical light of matter. We're leaving the astral plane out of it for the moment because that's going to be the area of our focus. The reasoning light of lower mind and the illumining light of higher mind, the area of the soul. So a triple light is now one. Vitality, reasoning, unity, revelation. Three are one. And we say, the light is one. And in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. And at this Scorpio time, we realize that the light of Scorpio is called the light of day. And it rules the Buddhic plane, as Scorpio does. So we're working at a very powerful time with energies which help to reinforce the light of day, which turns the darkness into day. Now, the formula. And, you know, wherever you are, you would be saying that out loud. Not here on the staff, but at home, you would say it out loud. And as we do say this, we visualize a great searchlight being created. All the triple lights, which are one, are now blended into one light, which is the searchlight. We're turning on that light, turning it onto the astral plane. And we say, together, radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And so our beam, our triple light as one, is now a beam. It's out there on the astral plane. It's going to do its work with the clouds, the veils, the miasmas, the darkness. It's going to do its dissipatory work. And we're going to add our spiritual will, the will of the hierarchy, the will of the atmic plane, really, ultimately, the will of Sanat Kumar. We're going to add spiritual will to our beam. We imagine it. That beam is filled with intent, with will, with power. So it can do its difficult task. And we say together, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And now work as we throw that light into the darkness. We're going to work with the glamour of fear, and especially the glamour of the fear of failure, which hovers over humanity and gives so many human beings that attitude of cannot do, can't. We try to overcome that can't. And so the words of power we now utter as we visualize the light doing its work, the beam doing its work, our weapon doing its work. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of fear, especially the glamour of the fear of failure. Instead of failure, success, the sun of success. The power of our united light is the quality of the glamour of the fear of failure from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour, devitalizing the glamour of the fear of failure. now using as a reference point these words of power, visualizing the light, penetrating the glamour, and producing its weakening and its dissipation, we will have our 5 minutes of silence and of intensity of purpose, as each in our own way and together as a group, we see this work proceeding. And we know that success, spiritual success, success of the inevitable. We have to have a deep conviction of this, a realization of this, and all of this depressing fear of the future, fear of failure, is blown away, dissipated, weakened, banished, devitalized. And we will be victorious. Warrior, I am. And from the battle, I emerge triumphant. We're right in the stream of that Scorpio energy. And we will, each one of us and all of us together, we will succeed. We withdraw then our beam back onto the mental plane. We turn off that searchlight. Some good has been done, some weakening of the glamour of the darkness of the veils, some weakening has occurred, some dissipation has occurred. And in affirmation of, let us say, the better condition of the astral plane and of the etheric, physical, and of the mental plane, we will sound the Om together 3 times. Thank you, friends. Full moon coming up, 5:22 and 49 seconds, GMT, Universal Time, tomorrow morning. We start our meditation actually at 10 minutes to 4. So at 3:50 a.m., GMT, UT. And for many of us, let's say in the United States, that will be the evening before, night before. For those in Australia, New Zealand, it's going to be later in the day. Inside the chat box is the link which you can copy for the service meditation broadcast which Tuya will be leading. And join us if you can, and if you don't have somewhere else to be, some other group that you're working with at this time, at that time, then join us, please, for the exact moment, full moon broadcast. Let's intensify. Warrior, I am, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. Intensify that now. Choose your battles. Look at the areas that you have to overcome. The fear of failure is one of those major areas. Let's be convinced of the unreality of that fear of failure. We've been a universal success more times than we can count, and that's a literal mathematical statement. So here we are again in the veil of illusion, working out a new algorithm, a new universal algorithm, but we will inevitably succeed. So thank you for being here, and Brett will get this up on Makara, and for those of you who sometimes cannot attend the actual Glamour meditation, then it'll be up there and you can do it on your own using the video that we will have posted for you. I appreciate very much, as I say, Olivia, Tuya, and I appreciate very much working with you, and I'm sure all of us with each other, we appreciate that. And Everybody, yeah, as Roswitha said here, let's all have a beautiful and good day indeed. So bye-bye for now, and let's intensify our approach to the Scorpio full moon. It's a great full moon. It really is great for humanity. Ruled by Scorpio, warrior I am, and from the battle I emerge triumphant. Many blessings, lots of love to everybody. Take care, and bye-bye.